Flight Director Jerry Griffin and his Flight Dynamics Officer Bill Stovall. Jerry?
Okay, I think you've probably followed most of the air ground here recently. We've been doing this checklist updating for the entry phase. We're just about to wind up the CSM portion of that, and as soon as we finish that, then we'll switch over and do the LIM closeout portion. And so happens that'll be a whole lot shorter than the CSM. And this other thing is kind of like reading the War and Peace or something over the air. I think we've been at it for about an hour now. And of course, that task has been in work, I guess, here at MSC and other places for about 3 days now, developing those procedures and running them on simulators. It just took a long time to pull it together, and we finally kind of got in right under the wire, time to read it in. We didn't do a whole lot else on our shift today. We did do some updating of our mid-course correction stuff, and I'll let Bill talk about that. He can tell you where that stands right now. And we have virtually the same consumables status that I gave you last night, and I'm not sure what Glenn told you this afternoon, but we're about the same position. We have finally emptied the potable water tank in the command module, and you may have heard just now we told them to go ahead and drink all the LIM water that they felt like they needed, because we got a pretty good pad left over there. And besides that, two of them are going to be going to sleep here pretty soon. There'll only be one of them up. So we're in good shape there. We're good shape power-wise. Oxygen, lithium hydroxide, all looks good. In fact, we've made our last kludge. If the CO2 level gets up high enough again to switch, we're just going to switch back to the alternate LIM primary canister and end out the mission on that. We've updated the crew on the stowage, and they've transferred stuff back and forth, except for a couple of exceptions that they just can't do until later. The probe and drogue get stowed over in the LIM. They'll have to wait to do that. And there's some couple of cameras that are left back over in the LIM that'll have to go to the CSM. But they're in real good shape, I think, housekeeping-wise, in the spacecraft, both of them. And as soon as we get ready to start this whole entry, what I'd call an entry phase, I think they'll be in real good shape to start it. Bill, why don't you say something about where the mid-course stands right now, what size it is and what time and all.
Okay, we've been watching this trajectory now for about 12 to 14 hours since we had the She burst this last night, and it seems to be settling down moderately well. We're looking at the mid-course anywhere from 2.7 to 3.4 feet per second, and it's sort of bouncing around in that region. That would be at a GET of about 137.40. So I'd fully anticipate a mid-course of somewhere in that vicinity.
Good. Bill, why don't you go ahead and tell them what kind of a burn and a duration and
okay.
That'll be if you've got
it. We're tentatively planning, if it stays down in this level, to do an RCS maneuver here. It would be on the order of 20 to 25 seconds long, somewhere in that range, depending on the delta V we need. And it would be done essentially just like we did the mid-course last night, where they align the ag system using some sightings on some planets, this type of thing. It worked out very well last night, and we anticipate it work out very well again. The attitude of the maneuver is certainly not critical, but we are trying to adjust the entry conditions so they'll be just perfect.
And I might mention, too, the entry angle, based, I think, on your last update, was what, minus 6.05?
6.05, which is about 46 hundredths of a degree shallow. We'd like to get it about 6.50, which is what we would target the mid-course to do.
Okay, now, let me give you a little bit, because I know you're going to ask. I'll give you a little bit now on the major sequences that we're going to go through. At 6 hours and 30 minutes prior to entry is where this entry phase is going to really start. At that time, we'll power the main bus A with the command module, battery C, and we will still have power from the LIM supplying power to main bus B. So at 6 hours and 30 minutes, we'll have both buses in the command module powered, and that's when we start a partial power-up of the command module. We'll come along and do mid-course 7 at EI minus, that EI is entry interface minus 5 hours. And at, shortly after that, at EI minus 4:30, we'll jettison the service module. And we are going to pitch, after that maneuver, we're going to pitch about 90 degrees and attempt to take any pictures that we can get of the service module as it moves away. And we are using this push-pull thing that I've talked about before to get the service module away from us, but it'll be at a very slow rate. And we're going to be taking pictures out of the LEM window, as well as our windows, as well as window number 5 in the command module. So we're going to have a lot of cameras looking at it, and hopefully it'll come off and turn in the right direction for us to see something if it's there to see. It will be uncontrolled, of course. We'll finally transfer total power. We'll terminate LEM power at approximately EI minus 2 hours and 30 minutes. And from that time on, we'll be completely on the CSM batteries. We will jettison the LEM at EI minus 1 hour. The technique for doing that is now zeroed in on, we will put both, of course, the CM hatch will be in. We'll close the LEM hatch with its vent valve closed. Then we will vent the tunnel down to about 2 psi. And when we separate the lunar module off, the pressure in the tunnel will push us apart. From there on, it's almost a normal, from EI minus 1 hour on, it's almost a normal entry, even as far as the checklist goes, it's almost a normal entry. So from there on, we wouldn't see much difference. This profile, the last time I checked, oh, incidentally, we have been charging the batteries. We charge Bat A. It's fully charged now. We are now charging Battery B, and we're going to top it off all the way so that we should have approximately 118 amp hours when we start this entry phase. That's in the command module. This profile runs around 106 is the last number I heard, and that may change a little bit because they are doing things a little differently, but that's ballpark, giving us a pad on the water of somewhere around 12 amp hours. And if you want to convert that to recovery time, it takes about an amp and a half an hour in a full-up condition. You can get it longer if you turn off the S-band and go VHF only. There's some other tricks you can play in there to extend that lifetime. Also, that's kind of a 3-sigma low battery amp hour assumption there, too. There's probably nearer to 50 amp hours in those batteries than 40, but we play it kind of conservatively there and put those other 10 amp hours in our pocket. So looks like things are going real well. We've got this checklist business, I think, is kind of a space first. That's an awful lot of reading, and I'm glad we had good comm to do it with. We finally had to turn the power amplifier on to make sure we could hear him well, and we finally got it up there. I think that's all I got.
Oh, you want to give them those entry numbers?
Oh, I can give you some.
Yeah, go ahead and give them that information.
Okay, entry interface will be at 142.40.40. That's 400,000 feet. Drogue time will be 142.48.55. Main chutes 142.49.43. Landing at 142.54.40. And that assumes a mid-course correction. The splash point for the command module will be 2140 south. That's degrees and minutes. 21 degrees 40 minutes south. 165 23 minutes west. The service module, whatever makes it through the atmosphere, should splash somewhere around 25 degrees 21 minutes south, 174 56 west. And likewise with the LEM, the whatever makes it through will be at around 25 23 south, 175 30 west. So you can see the service module and the limb are very close together. Somebody asked Glenn Lunny, and I'll throw it out now in case it, I can answer the question. The service module separation takes place 34,888 nautical miles above the Earth, and the limb jettison takes place 9,729 miles above the Earth. Nautical, those are nautical miles. Oh, on the altitudes, the last ones. Service module set 34,888, and limb jet 9,729.
Okay, we'll take questions now. Let's get this one here and come over here, and we'll get these two next.
You said something after you mentioned the length, or at least the amount of amp hours you had left on the water. That works out to 8 hours at 1.5 an hour. But you mentioned something else. Do you have other batteries?
No. These batteries are rated at 40 amp hours each. However, the batteries we know have some additional. Now, you always can't count on, you can't measure it for one thing. But there's 5 to 10 additional amp hours in any of these 40 amp hour batteries.
What drain do you expect from the equipment, the radio equipment?
You mean down on the water?
Yeah.
On the water? An amp and a half, continuous.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Gary, I gather you're happy with the way things are going step by step, but just subjectively, where's your personal confidence level right now?
It's good. I'm glad to see us get this checklist stuff up. That was a last big thing to do, and from here on in, it's men and equipment performing, and so I feel confident that we'll make it.
Mr. Strobel spoke as if the mid-course definitely will be made. Is that correct?
I'd say it's a pretty fair approximation. It's hard to tell with this trajectory moving as it is, but it would have to take some pretty significant deviations for us not to make the mid-course at the moment.
In fact, I would add to that, as long as it stays in this range, we will make it. If it did show a sudden decrease that we didn't have to do it, we wouldn't.
Mr. Lunny spoke this afternoon of the spacecraft still being comfortably within the reentry corridor, and I take it that is still true.
You want to talk about that? It's in the corridor. It's
yes.
It's shallow, but it is entering.
So the mid-course that you're going to make then is desirable but not mandatory, is that correct?
Well, it's really hard to pin down. It depends on what Glenn thought comfortable was. It's 6.05 is pretty shallow. Okay, 5.9 really defines the lower point of the corridor, if you will. And you're bumping it. I don't know what his definition of comfortable was, but I'd say anything within plus or minus 0.25 degrees of 6.5 would be comfortable. Anything other than that starts to get a little uncomfortable, but certainly flyable.
Did the one Al just asked, did you give us a time on this mid-course correction?
That would be a GET, at least the current planning, would show 137.40. And again, the time's not critical. It'll be the kind of thing that we had last night where they do it when they feel good about their alignment and everything else.
How many feet are you, is there any way to measure that? How do we express that correction?
The feet per second?
Yeah.
At delta V, it would be 2.7, 3.4. These are the kind of numbers we've been looking at all night. But it's in that range.
Last thing on times, to save us all some arithmetic, did you happen to translate these mission elapsed hours into Eastern Standard or Central Standard Time?
I haven't.
But splashdown is still the same.
Very shortly afternoon, I believe.
It must be about shortly afternoon, a few minutes.
It's within a minute or two from what I think they'd okay. We said earlier. Yeah.
We launched at 1:13. Central
back up Central. On the end of the front row.
That's the lap, so it's got to be
quick ones. What would happen if you did not make the mid-course correction? That's one. Two, how many people are going to be taking the pictures? And three, what are the chances of the limb burning up before it hits the face of the Earth?
Well, let me start from the back. The chances are that pieces of the limb will make it in. Now, I can't tell you exactly what pieces. It's kind of like the service module. Chunks of that usually make it in, and a lot depends on the orientation that it gets captured in the atmosphere at and so forth. So pieces of it undoubtedly will probably make it in. It's all out in the deep water out in that area. Now let me go back and answer the question. If we didn't perform the mid-course, it would mean that we would have to fly, and Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, the entry would be a little bit hotter on as far as temperatures go. It would be actually a lower G entry than nominal, and it would mean that we would have to probably fly some lift vector down more than we would in a normal entry. Is that about
that? The G level, I'm not sure about, but the rest of it's right.
Yeah.
It would definitely be lift vector down, and like I said, it's flyable. The retrofire officer would have to tell you which programs you may get into and all that. And I'm not that cognizant of that kind of thing.
It's not that much different. It would just be. That's why we define this Carter that way. It's acceptable in between those ranges. Slightly different orientation of the spacecraft as you modulate the roll to affect the lift.
But we'll be taking pictures.
Actually, all three of them, although one of the cameras is a sequence camera that you just turn on and it runs. Then you have Hasselblads that you actually activate. But all three of them will be involved in that.
Priority?
They're all low priority. We've put some priorities on the three sets of cameras, but it's only for our own purpose of, we'd rather have the pictures out of the limb because we feel the windows are going to be better, but all of it's low priority if they don't want to take them.
Yes, in just a minute when he's through over here. Okay, fire away.
I got a couple. First of all, how come the trajectory changes? And secondly, can you give us the heat of the peak point of the entry, please?
Bill, why don't you answer the first part?
It's not so much that the trajectory itself changes, but the way we measure this trajectory, all the radars across the country are using this what we call the Doppler shift to determine velocity, and we only determine the line of sight velocity. And it takes a very long time with it coming straight down at us to really get a good feel for where the spacecraft is any place else other than along the line of sight and how fast it's going. And last night, that perturbation we had when the she-tank blew. Okay, now that bothers our data, and it takes maybe 8 to 10 hours to recover from something like that. So it's not really the trajectory itself as much as it is our ability to determine the trajectory.
It's a geometry problem. A lot of it's just the geometry is not real good. So there's noise in your solution.
And we're having the comm situation here is not the best for tracking. Of course, with the limb is in a little higher PTC rate than we're used to, and the data doesn't quite fit as well, and the people just having a lot more trouble fitting it than they normally do.
That's one we can find out for you, and we can get the retrofire officer will have that, but we'll have to get it for you afterwards, and we'll have him call it over. We can give you the peak temperature.
Jerry, what do you expect to see on these pictures of the service module? Will they be trying to take pictures of the general area where the trouble developed on Tuesday night?
Well, we're going to just have to take what we get. Understand that the service module, as it comes off, is uncontrolled. It will probably not be perfectly stable because of the disturbance torques put to it when you blow the pyro ring. So hopefully it'll come off and turn one way or the other. And before it gets too far away, if there is anything of interest to see on it, which I suspect there probably is, hopefully we can get a picture of it.
Just one more question. Will you be trying to take any pictures of the limb after you jettison the
No.
limb?
No. At that time, see, you're 1 hour prior to entry interface, you got all the cameras stowed.
Again, to perhaps save us a little work if you have the answer already, those figures that you gave us for reentry time, procedure times, have they differed from the earlier ones that we got?
No, not significantly. They're about like the ones I gave you last night, I think. They're almost the same.
Mary Bob here on the front row, and then move over to Harry, please. Right. Well, yes. Ladies first. There.
Jerry, in the need to conserve power in the limb itself, first of all, what have you lost or sacrificed in the way of data? Secondly, because you haven't had things turned on in the Apollo, what have you lost there that maybe perhaps you would like to have had?
Okay, the limb data, we've lost almost nothing. We've operated a little more in low bit rate than we would have in a normal mission. We'd have had a little bit more high bit rate data. But since we didn't, most of the high bit rate data on the limb is associated with the pings, the primary guidance and navigation system. Since we didn't have the pings powered up, we really haven't missed much by not having high bit rate data. We've missed a few, you know, odd temperatures and so forth like that. But we really haven't lost very much data from the standpoint of the problem, because we had to power the pings down anyway. As far as the normal spacecraft's life support system and all, we've lost nothing. Now, in the command module side, we have lost our ability to, since it is powered down, to continually monitor the temperature trends. And that's why now three times we've taken, well, we've twice gone in. We had the conditions at shutdown, and then we've twice gone in and taken kind of a snapshot of the whole vehicle for about 5 minutes and determined what all of the temperatures were. And you can see the slopes of all of them plot out pretty nicely. The vehicle has cooled down. So we did lose the ability to continuously monitor those temperatures, but we've been able to get enough data to put the picture back together.
Where are the temperatures?
It looked like the cabin temperature in the command module was 45 degrees this last look we had. The general structure, most of the spacecraft was around that same level, 45 to some as high as 50. And it looked like the whole thing had cooled down about 5 degrees from where it was the last time we looked.
Harry?
Will reentry be controlled by the command module primary guidance and nav system?
Yes.
And if so, when will you fire it up, and how will you tell it where it is and what's going on after it's been sleeping so long?
Okay, we're going to do a cold startup. We're actually going to turn the power on at about minus two hours and 20 minutes. It's right after we terminate limb power. We've read up a procedure where he can use the sextant to do an Earth-Sun alignment. Let me take that back. A Moon-Sun alignment. And, however, we told him that when he was looking for as he was looking through the optics, if he could see stars, to go ahead and just do a normal P-51, P-52 in the pings, which is a normal startup, and do his alignment that way. The only reason we gave him the other technique was to cover all bets. Just in case he couldn't see stars, we wanted to make sure he had thought about how to use the sun and the moon to make that alignment. So he'll just be bringing up a platform, just like we did on Apollo 7. You know, we kept turning down the platform every time we got through with it, and he'll do the same thing.
Go ahead, Mark.
Jerry, a couple of questions. One, you said that the reentry from minus EI on down would be just about normal. What are the differences?
Well, there's some. In order to conserve power, for instance, we've waited late, say, for instance, to power up the backup control system. There's, you know, usually in a normal entry, we turn on both evaporators very early to pre-cool a spacecraft. Well, that's a problem we don't have this time. We're plenty cool enough already. So we'll be turning on the coolant loops rather late. There's a few other things like that. The EMS, the entry monitor system, we're bringing on a little later than normal. And that's, once again, an attempt to save a little power. But the things that we're doing are normal. The timing is a little bit different.
More the at EI, will we be completely normal?
Yes.
Okay, and the other is, I wonder if you go into the water situation a little bit more. I thought I understood that they were carrying water from the LEM to the CM in water bags, and I was just wondering if they're going to have any water in the CM for splashdown in case it takes a while to get a ship there.
Yes, they will. We haven't, they haven't done that yet, Mark, but they undoubtedly will. Right now, there's no bags. We asked them a question if they had any water stowed in bags anywhere, and their answer was no. So, but prior to closing out the limb and getting back into the command module, they will take some water in those 8-ounce drinking bags and take it back over to the command module with them. But there's no sense in doing that now. Once we take that water out of the system, we can't get it back in. And just in case we needed it for cooling, we'd have it to cover some other contingency. But they will take some water over there with them. Now, of course, in their survival kits, too, they've got three 5-pound cans, 15 pounds of water in each. There's five pounds in each survival kit.
It's firm they're not going to suit up, and secondly, how much of a power drain is it to cool off the suits if they were suiting up?
The answer to your question is that they aren't going to suit up. That's the plan. And, I don't know what the power drain is to run the suit circuit. It's probably on the order of 5 amps, I'd think, something around there. And just to run a fan and a glycol pump, you know.
I may not have figured this, but in terms of your total plan, in terms of reading it up, can you give us an approximate on the time that it will take from beginning to end to have read this total plan?
I think probably by the time we've done it all, it'll be close to 2 hours.
Questions. Would the MCC or the lack of it affect the splashdown point? And the second, what is your latest weather report?
I didn't hear the second part, but the first part, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we got enough capability to steer back to the target point, as long as you're in the Carter.
I believe so, but I'm getting out of my area there.
We would still target for the same point. Now, someplace, if you're very shallow or very long, you obviously don't have enough lift to get up and in, or you don't have enough negative G lift to turn you in shorter. But I think within the constraints of the corridors we've defined it, you could get back to the target point. Let me take that. That's another question I'll find an answer for you. Now, what was your second question? I didn't hear it.
The weather.
The weather. Oh, the weather's good. 2,000 scattered clouds, 4-foot seas. Wind is about 15 miles an hour, 10 to 15 miles an hour. And they do expect widely scattered, and when they say widely, they mean 10% or less, showers. And in those showers, you can expect 2,000-foot broken conditions, which is an overcast as opposed to a scattered cloud. But it's a broken overcast. But that would only be in the showers, and those are 10% of the area or less. It looks real good.
Kent, did you have a question while ago, or did somebody answer it?
Let's see, we had two things.
If you answered this, I didn't hear. Why did you say they're not wearing the suits tomorrow, Jerry?
Well, that's the normal entry. We don't do entries suited anymore, unless we have reason to suspect that the cabin's leaking or going to leak or is leaking. So that's just the normal configuration. Now, the reason that we discussed it some today, and you may have heard some commentary on Air Ground, was since we're putting the hatch in kind of late, in this case because we're dumping the limb. Normally we got rid of it back at the moon, and we've flown all the way back, being able to monitor the cabin very closely. In this case, we're putting in the hatch pretty late, and we won't have hours and hours of data to see that hatch made a good seal. But conversely, we also have a lot of confidence in the hatch. Jim said he was going to try a couple of times, practice putting it in, and make sure it goes in smoothly and make sure he's squared away on putting it in. And if there was a gross leak, we could detect that in the time that it'll be in there. That's all that we would be worried about. So in that case, if they did, we might have to have them get in the suit very quickly, but I'm not expecting that. The hatch is a very simple device with a seal around the edge, and you put it in and close it. So the unsuited entry, though, is normal.
Go ahead.
About how many miles from the splashdown point of the command module is the splashdown point for the SM and the LM?
Gee, I'd have to plot it up. I think it's on the order of 500 miles, but somebody's shaking their head. Yeah, it's on the order of 500 miles.
What range?
Uprange.
Will you be able to recover any of the pieces of the SM that you were talking about? And if so, will they be able to give you any kind of a clue as to what happened Monday night?
No. Like I say, we don't have forces in that area. This is just hunks of metal, and when it hits, it's going to sink. So the likelihood of doing that would be nil. In fact, you just couldn't do it. And even if you did, after going through an entry, you couldn't tell anything about it. It'd be all burned up, mostly.
How close to the target area will the rescue ships be when it hits? In other words, if it hits exactly where you want, are the rescue ships going to be able to be in the area?
You're talking about the command module?
When the command module hits, yeah.
We'll have forces on station. Aircraft carriers and helicopters and all kinds of boats.
Okay, thank you very much.